Ahoy! Welcome to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Estes and Isla Creme. This week, we're chatting with Whitney Racklin, the Chief Marketing Officer at Yield Street. She'll be discussing how technology has opened the doors to diversification at scale, how alt-funded investors are diversifying today, and how much capital should really be allocated to various alternative asset classes. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back, one and all. Hopefully, you've had some good conversations. We neglected our agenda slide, so I'm going to have to wing it. But y'all can experience. We're going to talk to Ms. Whitney here in a little while to have you learn something new from Yield Street. And then we're going to do two more rounds of breakout rooms, kind of similar to what you just experienced. And the reason we do that is because this is, well, it's first and foremost a networking event. So we try to have you connect, come back, come away a little bit more well connected with alternative investors from all over the world. But then also we do try to spend about three quarters of our time together, or a quarter of our time together, learning something new from our speaker du jour, Ms. Whitney, today. If you like this sort of thing, networking in particular, there is an in-person version of this in London, if you're in that neck of the woods, on July 12th. I should be there, so it'd be nice to meet some of y'all in person. But the reason we do this is because Diffuse, what we do is we're a fund platform. So we launch various funds across various strategies. One is a yield farming strategy focused on DeFi, and the other is a index fund of the top 30 assets that we're in the middle of IPOing. Should be live whenever FINRA gets around to it. So keep posted for that. And if you want to participate, let us know. It is investable at the moment. But with that, our speaker of the day is Ms. Whitney Racklin. Whitney, I am terrible at introductions. Would you mind unmuting yourself and telling us a little bit more about you and your background and what you're up to over at Yield Street?
Sure. I actually spent most of my career at American Express for about 15 years, doing everything that they do to train general managers. I ran card products. I ran partnerships. I negotiated platforms. I built new platforms. And then jumped into the startup world about 4 years ago. I spent a little time in crypto, and I've been over here at Yield Street as their chief marketing officer for the last year and a half.
I'll hop into the first question, and probably starting out with something super basic, just to make sure everybody knows what we're talking about. What is diversification in your book? What does that really mean?
It's really investing outside your classic stocks and bonds. You know, there's a lot of discussion about the 60-40 and is it really dead? And is the new 60-40, the 60-20-20? I know for me and for many others, you're trained at college graduation to invest every dollar you can into your 401k, and then you'll be okay to retire. I think that is a former pipe dream that is not really existing anymore. And diversifying away from the stock market is always a smart idea. Obviously, at a balanced rate and a balanced risk and return rate. But having all of your assets there, you know, we're experiencing another downturn, which you don't invest based on downturns or upturns, but you feel the pinch when you haven't done that diversification. We work in a startup, so lots of young people here who were not around during the 2008 crisis. So we've been talking about that as a real value story for alternatives and making sure that not every dollar you have is in the stock market and you don't experience such extreme loss during these downturns.
So, you know, right in your wheelhouse, what has driven that change? As you said, when people learned in college, just chuck your money in equities, generally speaking. Is it technology? What's driving this new rise of alternatives? I've also heard, and maybe you can speak to it, the phrase, the private markets are the new public markets. I don't know if that's applicable in your world.
No, I believe that strongly. I do think it's technology. If you think about a hedge fund, they keep minimums very high because why deal with those regular Joes who want to invest 10, 20, 30,000, just, you know, let's limit the number of people who can invest. You know, same thing with a real estate deal. Let's get five big investors so we don't have to deal with the pain it is of managing multiple, you know, more than that in terms of investors. So technology has allowed for platforms to come around to create the operational backbone to allow thousands of investors into a real estate deal because you don't have to deal with different checks and forms and everything else. We've been able to do that for them. So that's been our goal. I don't know about the rest of you, but when I started out, I was wondering how all my rich friends were getting into real estate. How does somebody do that without a big check? And now I know, you know, there's tons of platforms out there that allow it to happen. And I think, you know, it is the golden age of fintech, and it's allowing more people to be part of private markets, which are now the new public markets. It's as easy to be a part of the private markets as it is in the stock market now.
Maybe thinking about your youngish staff or as the folks that are getting into the space for the first time, how should they really be thinking about designing a strategy around diversification with one's risk appetite in mind? Because not everything is right for the same person. And how can you kind of dig into your own, you know, how should I be investing for myself, my appetite when it comes to alts?
Yeah, I mean, the general guideline that we tend to hear these days is that alts is about 20% of your platform, of your overall investable assets. And within that 20%, you should be balanced. So you should be in some things that potentially are higher risk, some things that are slightly lower risk. Being risk aware is very important. A lot of people say, you know, I'm risk averse, so therefore I'm not in private markets. There's no such thing about being risk averse. It's just being risk aware and understanding your appetite in the same way you would put your portfolio across the stock market. What's more risky, less risky? Higher returns generally equal more risk, and people don't always realize that. They just see the returns part of it. So when I talk to my younger staff, who probably educates me more than I educate them on what to invest in, thinking about, you know, the underlying structure of different private markets and making sure you have the right information to make those investments properly. I sometimes use the IRR as a benchmark of some things are really high return, they must be much higher risk, and then sort of starting from there. But also making sure not everything is in the same asset class. Getting into real estate is great, but how do you diversify beyond just real estate? Our platform is intended to do that, so you can diversify across alternatives on one platform, even into crypto, versus going to many different platforms across very different ones. And I would also say a lot of people under 30 think alternatives is just crypto, and educating the mass market that that is not the case is also very important.
Okay, that makes sense. So you want people to be risk aware, which makes sense. Part of the appeal of ETFs is I don't have to think about it at all. And that's probably why there's been the massive rise of them lately.
Yep.
How do you become risk aware? That feels like a lot of education and time commitment that the average Joe investor might not necessarily have.
Yeah. I mean, one of our goals, you know, as a marketing team is to create bite-sized pieces of content to make people more aware of what they're investing in. It takes a lot of work to educate yourself and like reading the journal every day, reading many different things. So we tend to produce 2 30-second to 2-minute videos that give you an overview of what is investing in real estate and what do you need to know, what is alternatives, what do you need to know, and having a series of those types of things. I also subscribe to some simpler newsletters like The Alt or Vincent that gives me a little overview of what's going on in the marketplace, so I get a better understanding. And then I kind of go with some of the guidelines that I follow with stocks. You listen to analysts. You hear what's going on in the marketplace. I listen to some investors in the office. I listen to some people in some of these spaces and hear what they're interested in and what regions they're investing in and what areas of VC they're interested in, and follow along with that. And I put little bits across the marketplace as opposed to plowing everything into one thing. And I also have crypto as part of my portfolio, which I knew ahead of time, which a lot of people didn't know, is you also need to be diversified from crypto.
Maybe looking at especially how alts have evolved as a part of an institutional portfolio, how has the understanding of alts changed over the last, say, 10, 15 years? And is it becoming a space that institutions are allocating to with kind of great appetite, or is most of them still cautious about that space? How do you think about that?
Yeah, the data point that we tend to gravitate towards is that institutions are investing today about 40% of their assets into alternatives across the spectrum, while retail investors are only about 2-5%, and where they shouldn't be at 40, like institutions, because they probably don't have the level of information that institutions have. But somewhere between 10 and 20% is probably the right allocation for retail investors. Institutions historically probably were not as deeply into those areas. But then again, institutions generally go where they have more information than general public or more knowledge. So that would make it somewhat organic for them to be more into alternatives than they were before. I also think that the markets themselves have made that opportunity more available. So the availability brings access and therefore brings participation.
Okay, so I'll pick up a question here from Merzen. All right, I bought your spiel that the 6040 is dead or should be on its way out the door. And I need to diversify away in a risk-aware manner. What is a reasonable allocation, do you think, of across the various buckets? And obviously, that's going to be dependent upon your particular risk appetite, but just kind of some baselines. How do you look at that?
So our general guideline is 10 to 20%. That is going to differ by your risk awareness, but it's also differing by your age. So when we're younger, we tend to be in higher growth opportunities. As you get older, you tend to be in more conservative opportunities. So if you're in that 10 to 20% range, you're probably higher if you have the affordability to lose a little money along the way. And if you don't, you're probably a little lower. But once you decide what that allocation is, it's important to do it across asset classes. If I'm only in real estate, I'm going to experience the same problems that I do if I'm only in one stock.
One thing to what I wanted to touch on when it comes to specifically allocating for institutional investors, due diligence. They have a lot of resources to do due diligence. Certain asset classes, we've seen crypto kind of surprise collapse, expected stash surprise collapse in a lot of ways. When people start looking at different verticals to invest in, how does Yield Street look at due diligence, for example?
So we really pride ourselves in doing the due diligence for our investors and taking that burden away from them. We are a platform. We're, for the most part, not manufacturing our own investments. So therefore, we're making sure that the things we participate in on behalf of our future investors are incredibly well vetted. Less than 5% of the opportunities that pass across our investor team's desk actually make it to the platform. So we are incredibly vigilant in making sure that we've done as much research as possible and is available to us. And we've done the market research in addition to that. And we have some of the best experts who've had, you know, many years of experience in institutions and in those various asset classes outside of Yield Street here to help us make sure that we're providing the best opportunities to our investors.
Okay. I have a bit of a specific question from Len here. Crowdfunding. So you're talking about accessibility, democratization of finance is something I've heard thrown around a little bit. Sounds kind of similar to crowdfunding and also what you're arguing for. How do you view Yield Street specifically as opposed to crowdfunding? How much of an overlap is there? Where's the Venn diagram?
I can't speak exactly to the Venn diagram, but what I can say about what Yield Street does is, we're putting our money where our mouth is. We're investing, and then we're allowing investors to participate in that. So whether we get a full stack of investors to fill out that investment, we're invested in it regardless. So by us making this investment, we're able to create accessibility and democratize the ability for people to participate in things that where the minimums were too high, or where they didn't have the information, the due diligence wasn't there. So there are nuances to it. They're not exactly different, but they're not exactly the same. And I think you need to take each platform for its own value and what they do and how they do it and decide for yourself if that's the right place to do it. We kind of talk about us as more fractionalized investing than crowdsourced investing. Again, nuanced, but the specifics are a little bit different.
Okay, I'll do another question there. So there's nuance there, there's some element of crowdfunding and opening up to it. The flip side of that is risk aware, to use your term, and you have to do the education. Again, though, not everybody has the time for that. A lot of regulation and compliance is actually to protect people that aren't risk aware from themselves. Yeah. So do you think this trend towards the rise of alts and fractional ownership kind of flies in the face of that to some degree?
It does. I think there's a lot of regulation for the benefit of investors. It doesn't always do all of the things that it needs to do, but we also need to remember, I take the viewpoint that people with money, they're adults and they need to make their own decisions. And as long as they have the information that's available to them, they should be making the right decisions. When we put up an offering, for example, we'll give you the basics if you don't really want to do any research. And here's why we like it. There's always the top three bullets. But for people who know and want to educate themselves, there's a deep, deep well of information that you can read every aspect of the deal that we've had And you can do that level of due diligence. So there's always going to be people who jump into things without any knowledge. I think the crypto market is a perfect example of that. They have no idea what it is, but they're fully invested and they've plowed money into it. Not that that might have helped them in the last few weeks, but you know, that's the fact. I think as long as you give people the information they need and at least help guide them in their decisions, people should be able to make those decisions and put their money where they want. Our goal is that nobody ever loses a dollar and everybody always gains in the way that we tell them we think they will. But we're not always right. We've been right about 97% of the time so far. And we provide as much information as people want. But we can tell when people read nothing and we can tell when people read a lot. And you'd see, there's a wide spectrum. And I would say just because people understand the markets doesn't necessarily mean they are even understanding the unique investment. So people use information in different ways.
And obviously for that level of information, they pay some sort of a fee, I would assume. So there's a question from Rich.
Not on Yield Trade. Our information is free. If you invest with us, you have every piece of information that we have. The educational content we have is free. It is supposed to be there to help guide our investors. We are not a broker dealer. We cannot give advice. So the information we provide and the snippets of video that we provide and the deep information on our due diligence is there for people to make their own decisions. It is free. We encourage people to read and understand the investments that they're getting into, but we do not give advice. So everything is free and available to any investor.
Interesting. And then, so if they decide to kind of go along and invest alongside Yield Street, what does a relationship look like between the investor and Yield Street?
We do our best to keep people up to date as deals progress. If you are invested in a real estate deal that was, you know, offered on our platform about 6 months ago, it was likely up on platform for a couple of weeks. Sometimes things go in a couple of hours, but usually at least a couple of weeks. And we'll provide updates as we receive them. So if you were invested in a commercial property in Savannah, Georgia, we will send you a quarterly snapshot of how that deal is progressing, especially with equity, given that it's such a long, could potentially be several years before, you know, the term of that deal is going to end and you'll receive your funds. We make sure people are aware of the progress of construction or of leasing, or you're in an art equity deal, what has been the art auctions and what has been happening to the valuation of that specific artist. So we will keep people up to date and we provide updates on platform to those investors. We'll also provide them broadly. So if you were checking out a deal and you didn't invest in it, there'll be an opportunity to go into that deal and say, how did it progress over time? And maybe I want to get into that next time and maybe I don't.
Merzen has another question, touches on selection bias. One would argue the good sponsors aren't going to Yield Street for their particular deal. And likewise, every family office looking to invest thinks they have amazing deal flow. I would argue that's probably not the case in most yeah. times. But selection bias is a real thing, right? The top quality deals tend to go quickly and not necessarily to a fractional ownership type setup yeah. or for bigger pocket folks for simplicity. How do you overcome that? How do you view that kind of criticism of the model, I guess, overall?
So if you look at our past deal offerings, you'll see that's actually not the case. Mark Lurie just offered a piece of his funding, his latest capital raise on Wonder on our platform. We partnered with Greenspring, now Stepstone, on a VC fund earlier this year. We worked with Pantera on an early coin fund for crypto. So we are getting actual pieces from large and really well-renowned sponsors. As I think fractionalized investing becomes more normal for the retail investor, those funds that maybe previously were not interested in places like Yield Street have really turned the corner and we're actually getting more proactive outreach from them specifically. There's deals in the pipeline that I obviously can't speak to, but some pretty impressive names. And if you were to go on our platform, you can see the institutions and the companies that we've been working with.
One other question that I probably want to pick up from the audience, while and kind of closely related, is if somebody runs a alternative investment opportunity, a fund, a deal, what is the process for them to engage with Yield Street? Let's say you're a GP of an emerging fund, for example.
Sure. We have a link on our site for our originations team. So if you are interested in getting funding for a debt deal, an equity deal, you can reach out. There's a very clear link on our site to do so.
Awesome. And we end with a call to action, the Q&A section. I love it. Well, we're going to have one more question for you after the break, which is kind of tell the future. What are you excited about? What's coming down the path, down the road? That's the one. Yep. But in the meantime, we're going to do another breakout room and just some housekeeping items. This is a networking, not pitching. Please be respectful of that. Be kind to one another. And then also, we don't do a participant list. So if you meet somebody you want to connect with in the breakout room, swap details then and there, or join our Telegram group. It's a great network, great community. Introduce yourself, ask for something. You'll be surprised. Al, you want to talk breakout rooms?
Yep. I will pop you into rooms now. You will be in there for about 10 minutes or so. Definitely stick around to meet some other alternative investors. And Whitney, she will also be in one of them. So you might get back and actually be able to ask questions directly. I'll give you a prompt. Don't feel hostage to that prompt, of course. The question du jour is, would you yourself be interested in fractional investing alongside other investors, or do you prefer to do your own diligence and your own deals? I'll pop you into rooms now, and we will see you back here in exactly 10 minutes.
Okay. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you learned about something alternative. We talked about space and reverse computing, which is the next thing I'm going to Google when we're done with the call here, because I have no idea what that is. But Ms. Whitney, back to you. Tell us the future. What are you excited about? What's something maybe off the wall? Bonus points, as always, for something the audience hasn't necessarily heard about.
In terms of alternatives, we're seeing, I mean, fractionalized investing is where we are. We're seeing that open up across so many more asset classes. We've had opportunities. I can't talk about pretty much anything, but anything that there's an opportunity to do it. Obviously, I heard somebody mention cannabis. We're always looking at that as like where things might be going. There's always collectibles. Those are very specific to specific platforms and they require different types of things. But, you know, anything that people can get their hands on to invest in, I think they're doing. Some of them are a little off the wall. Some of them, I think, are a little bit more interesting. But I do see people's ability to access alternatives constantly increasing. Hopefully regulation will not become over-regulation and allow people of everyday person to continue to invest in those things. And I think the access will only continue to expand.
All right. Expanding access. And it's a brave new world always out there with a bunch of interesting things. And this might be, you'll see, might be a good way to get exposure to some of the more exciting ones. Oh, Chris is putting you on the spot /IM via Chris. What's one off the wall area that you've recently seen, not necessarily tied to Yield Street?
I actually have a good one. We almost bid on a full skeleton of a dinosaur as a collectible. And then we decided not to go there, but we actually were at Christie's on the phone, back about a month ago, potentially, buying a dinosaur fossil, full skeleton, actually.
That's brilliant.
Yes.
Love it. Dino tech.
Fractionalized investing of a dinosaur. I thought that was pretty cool, but maybe not as marketable.
Would we get a bone?
Nobody gets a bone, but I was sort of picturing the woolly mammoth in Miami and the gold-plated Damien Hirst. I was like, we could do that on Park Avenue. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, fractional ownership of that piece of art, all diamond-studded.
Uh-huh. I thought that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's arbitrageable. Just yank the diamonds out.
Exactly. Aaron said it's incredibly marketable. Well, you should get your heads together with Miss Whitney there. You guys can
there's another one going up for auction, a bigger one. It was just announced this morning.
Oh, man. There you go. Love it. I'll pop you one more time into breakout rooms. This is a good opportunity to share amongst yourselves your off-the-wall alternative investment opportunities that you've run across in the last 6 months. Assuming it's not crypto, what else crazy stuff have you seen that might be worth taking a peek at? I'll pop you into rooms now, and we will see you back at just before the hour.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to do a quick wrap up and get you out of here about 1 minute past the hour. Apologies for that. So briefly, up next, next week, we do this every week, by the way, getting ETFs DeFi ready. Fascinating topic, near and dear to our heart here at Diffuse. As a reminder, July 12th, London in-person version of this. Fewer speakers, more drinks. And then also join our Telegram group. Always a good community. Ayla, what are the talking points I missed?
That is it. We look forward to seeing you all next time. And in the meantime, if you need anything, ping us. And we'd love to hear your thoughts and feedback if you have any. Otherwise, we will see you next week.
And Ms. Whitney Racklin of Yield Street, really appreciate you taking the time to teach us a little bit about what you're up to. Yeah, appreciate it. And everybody, thanks for coming out. And we'll see you in a week. All right. Cheers. Bye. Have a good one. That's all, folks. Hope you learned something new. If you join us on Zoom every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central, you can also network with other fascinating alternative investors from all over the world in small groups of four or five. Learn more on our website at www.diffusefunds.com. Until next time.